it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go.
Hey,
now I can hear
there
us.
There he is.
Welcome in.
Somewhere. Tell Dave Marcus to turn the button on.
Yeah, I don't want to tell him that because he'll look at me and think that I'm making him look bad. Because he didn't. I don't know. I don't think Dave had anything to do with that.
That wasn't a Dave incident this time, huh? All right. Wasn't a me incident either.
He just said, "It wasn't me. I wasn't. It had nothing to do with me."
All right, Dave's on. Dave and Scraby are you know, both in the clear on this one.
Welcome in, Gwynn and Chris. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Sello, Matt Scraby, 201 on the dial. Padres with a wonderful comeback victory in 10 last night after being down 3. It looked dark, but it ended with light. Fernando Tatis Jr.
It did.
Fernando Tatis Jr. with the sack fly thankfully. Got the Padres the victory. Yeah. They get a gain a game on the Cubs. Gained
on the Mets, and you know, look, it stayed right there with the Dodgers, who, you know, again, they pitched a no hitter into the ninth inning. My God, it's twice in the last three games.
Good to be true,
but they actually won this game. But Barry, you know what? The Rockies let off the ninth inning with a double, and I'm thinking, oh, could this happen again? But
I turned to our statistician Grayson yesterday. I was like, just assuming because it was 1-0 on my thing. I was like. Hey, who's I turned to him with like a befuddled look. I said, "Who's throwing a no hitter for the Rockies right now?" And he said, "It's not the Rockies; it's the Dodgers."
The Rockies had a run. Yeah, they got a run early in the game without a hit, and then
did lead me astray. I was like, "How is this even possible?"
Yeah, Tanner Scott gave up the no hitter bid in the ninth inning, leadoff double, but then the Rockies rally died right there. But luckily, the Padres rally never died last night, Tony. I mean, you know. You Darvish, to me, this is what they need. I know people want him to go 5 shutout, 6 shutout, and wipe everybody out. He gave up 2 home runs last night. He gave up a 2-out single to De La Cruz to score another run. But when he left the game, 3-0 is doable. And we've talked about this with this team this year. Get me through 5 or 6 innings and give me a look at the game. And they had that last night. And, you know, credit Jackson, you know, huge hit there and, you know, got it tied up. And, you know, the bullpen did their thing once again. I think the Reds had 1 hit against the bullpen. So this is why we just want to keep games close. And that was a nice win, a big win. They're all big, as we said.
They're all big from here on out. But that one was nice, especially. Padres hung in there. I thought Darv did a terrific job after the long first he had.
Right.
Was able to bounce back. Yes, he gave up the solo homers, and that's been a little bit of an issue for him. But they were solo. The ones he given up in the previous spot, I believe, was a 3-run shot or a grand slam to Suarez.
Right.
He gave up a 3-run shot the other homer. And so they say you can win games if you're giving up solo homers, right? You can withstand 1 or 2 of those. The Padres did that. I thought, once again, the offense just stayed with it. Lodolo, when he's on, and it's not even when he's on, when he's healthy, that's the kind of pitcher he is. Just look at the numbers. I mean, he has been pretty solid outside of the time he's missed. And he was like that again. But the Padres hung in there. They got their opportunity. And Jackson Merrill, man, I mean, the Padres are going to make a deep run. Jackson's going to have to be as good as he's been the last couple of games. Manny's going to have to, you know, get going in the right direction. But what a team win, though, for this ball club.
Can we hear for Gavin Sheets, too? I mean, 3 for 3.
Yeah. Gavin was literally the entire offense
for most of the game. Gavin Sheets has just been I honestly have to give him at least a conversation for team MVP. I know he's not going to win it, but we've talked about what he's meant to this team in so many different ways. The first way he meant something was just arriving on the scene, hitting a home run on opening day, working his way into the lineup, becoming a major part of the lineup earlier in the season when the team wasn't doing well, doing all of those things, going out to left field and starting by running over a wall and then becoming a pretty good left fielder as the season has gone along. So that was huge. Then there comes the trade deadline, and Gavin Sheets is sent to the hinterlands. But you know what? We don't hear a peep from Gavin Sheets complaining about it, do we? He just says, I'll go to the bench, I'll be the best pinch hitter I can be, and I'll be ready when they call my number again. And now they're calling his number again, and he's ready again. He's run the gamut of so many different ways of contributing this year. It is MVP to me type stuff. You're going to always give it to Manny in the end. You're going to give it to the big names and the guys, but these are the heroes of a team for me, Tony. And I believe his teammates must feel the same way about him.
Well, I don't think you can say it any better than that. I think that's exactly what you love about guys like Gavin, right? I think. All of the boxes that he has checked throughout the season that you kind of just ran through there.
Yeah.
The hardest of which comes sitting on the bench after getting consistent playing time. And it's not just sitting on the bench for like a couple games. It was about a 2-week stretch. We didn't see Gavin like at all.
Nope.
And every time we did see him, he did something. And at some point, every manager, I don't care who it is, takes note of that. And the next time the opportunity was presented, he didn't hesitate. Sheets was in there and really hasn't come out of the lineup since that moment or since that time as Jackson went down with that injury. He hasn't left the lineup yet. And so he continues to just, I think, exemplify what it means to be a pro. And he's coming into his own. This is a career year. That can't just wash over everybody. I mean, he's having the best year of his career right now. He's one away from having 20 homers. I mean, he's already broken it, but now he's moving into a different territory here. And Jackson's words at the end, I think what he said there, you know, kind of going after they won that game, he said, I honestly appreciate coming back tonight more than just blowing them out. It proved a lot in us, our determination and what we wanted to do this year. Not giving up after we go down 3, it means a lot. It proved we're locked in the whole game. I just thought that was a grinded out type of win. And the numbers proved to be true, right? It was, you get to their bullpen, you got a shot. The Padres, as you said, Darv kept it where it is. The bullpen kept it where it was. They got to their bullpen, and then the fun began.
Yeah, I got nothing but respect for Terry Francona, and he's down there and talking to Lodolo, but when Lodolo doesn't come out for the sixth inning, after 79 pitches, it's a standing ovation for me, because that was like the best news of the night. And, maybe he's, he knows Lodolo's situation obviously better than I do. But I didn't understand why they took him out in the first place, but I'm glad they did. The other part of it, that probably went unnoticed, but a big problem of late was not the case last night, Tony. Padre pitching 12 strikeouts, no walks. That's another, contribution to a victory.
When these guys are throwing strikes.
Yeah, that includes right. Darvish didn't walk anybody either. You're right. And, keep the ball over the plate. When they were in this 9 of 11, man, they were behind every hitter, it seemed, for a week and a half. So good to see that back. Last night, throwing strikes, and it's a good win all the way around. Everybody, it's one of those ones, even if you go for 3, I think you feel like you contributed, because it was everybody pushing and pulling for everybody. Yeah. And you know that feeling, Tony. Everybody wants to feel like they're part of a win, and just, you saw the celebration afterwards. Everybody felt like they were part of that.
They wanted that one, and they knew they didn't want to let that one slip away, especially once they got back in it. And so kudos to the Pods. They mix of the night, Michael King makes his return from the IL. Hard to know what to truly expect. I don't know, the expectations should be extremely high. I'm just happy to see the guy back on the mound today for the Pods.
Me too. To me, I hope it's the first of 4 starts that he's able to make between now and the first week of October. because I fully expect that we're going to need a big Michael King game sometime the first week of October. We don't need it tonight, but at the same time, you know, hopefully it'll give us three or four innings, you know, just keep us in the game and get comfortable back out on the mound tonight. Little scouting report for those going to the game tonight. Do I dare say this, Tony, if you're sitting in the left field pavilion or a right field seat somewhere? Zach Littell has given up more home runs than any pitcher in baseball this year. It doesn't mean he can't get guys out. I mean, he's a pretty good pitcher, and he beat the Padres earlier this year when he was with Tampa Bay. But he does have problems this year with the home run. So hopefully the Padres can get a couple guys on base and you know, get that home run in a timely spot tonight. You know, help them win another ball game and keep the heat on the Dodgers. You're probably, I know that the Dodgers lost 3 to the Pirates. I know they had trouble with the Orioles, et cetera, but I'm not expecting help from the Rockies in L.A. this week, the next two nights. So to me, the Padres got to take care of their business and, you know, stay right there. Because the Rockies, I don't think, I told Scraby last night, I don't think the Rockies have won a game in L.A. since.
It does seem like it's been
since they moved from Brooklyn. I mean, it's, you know, just ridiculous. The Rockies go there and they completely lay down. Well, they got no hits last night until the ninth inning. I mean, come on.
They completely lay down.
They do. By the way, the comeback last night, you know, again, we've said this. You and I never thought anything differently. But how many times did we hear in the last 3 weeks that this team just doesn't look like they care? Right. Nah, they're not playing it. They're not giving it an effort. They've mailed it in. I wish I had a dollar for every time I've heard that one.
That's probably my favorite one. Out of all of them,
right.
They've mailed it in is probably my favorite.
Yeah. Okay, so where are those comments today? Probably not going to hear them today.
They're not here today.
They're not here today.
Because the Padres certainly didn't mail it in. So
that's
there
right.
you go. All right, let's get to break. More Gwynn and Chris on the other side. We dive into possible lineup. Not yet. And Michael King's debut. More on the other side.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 2:17. We welcome you back to Gwynn and Chris. I happen to know this because Tony erroneously mentioned it yesterday. But if it's 2:17 here, what does that mean, Scrape? It's 8:17 in Pango Pango.
We did look it up yesterday.
We actually looked that up.
Was that correct?
Yes,
that was
it
correct.
Was. It was.
You were absolutely correct when you said that.
First of all, I never heard of Pango Pango.
I don't know. So,
I think it's Pago Pago, but same thing.
Where did you pull that out of? Because it came completely out of nowhere.
There's an area of my mind that most people do not want to go to.
Clearly.
That's where it is. Yes, it is Pago Pago. You're right, Scrape. Pago Pago. It's in America. It's the capital of American Samoa.
Don't ask me why my mind works the way it does. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much sums it up there. And but no, Tony said it's 8 something, and we're like, what? Where? And
I started
Pango?
To say it's 8.
Yeah,
I stopped
right.
myself.
You did.
But,
you did.
You know, you
but of course, we've made
a
big deal out of it, and now it's going on forevermore. We have the ball game coming up a little later tonight. We mentioned it. Michael King and Zach Littell for the Reds. Padres comfortable at the moment. 6 games clear of San Francisco in the wild card in terms of making the wild card.
And right. For those who may not understand what Chris is talking about, that just means right now they're positioned 6 games ahead of the Giants in the second spot.
Yeah, right. For the Padres to miss the playoffs entirely, they'd have to fall below the Giants, and they have plenty of leeway at the moment. But, you know, they have hopefully bigger fish to fry, which is, you know, passing the Dodgers here down the stretch. Dodgers, once again, will draw the Rockies tonight.
You start looking at the matchup, right?
Yeah.
And I know, listen, ultimately the Padres will face whoever they face, but if you had your druthers and who you'd rather face, I think you'd probably rather face the Cubs than having to face the Dodgers. And I think that's how it would line up, because at this point, whoever wins the West is likely not going to get a bye unless Philly has a collapse, which I'm not ruling out considering the guys that they're missing right now. But they got a great pitching performance from Nola last night. And so I would say that you start looking at the matchups, and we're just forecasting. I certainly understand there's a lot of baseball left, but I think the matchup against the Cubs.
They match up with the Cubs right now where they are. If they pass the Dodgers, Tony, and get the three spot, I think they would probably get the Mets here. And that's no gimme, but I would take Mets here rather than Cubs at Wrigley Field, which is where it is right now. That, to me, is what's at stake. You have it differently?
I think ultimately the goal is to win the division, so that sets you up to do any of that. If, indeed, they aren't going to, and the options are the second wild card spot or the third wild card spot.
I see, You want to stay ahead of the Mets, then, you don't have to slide into the Dodgers in L.A.,
right,
which is still a possibility, right?
You'd rather hold that off as long as possible.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, I would rather I don't want to see them again any earlier than the championship series.
There's some people who think that there's actually people who've said that, you know, if we're going to play the Dodgers, let's play best of three. It's easier to beat them there than it is in a best of five or a best of seven.
That's not a terrible thought.
I don't know if it's true.
I don't know if it's true either, but
I don't either. I'd rather play in a best of seven because that means I'm in the championship series. That's where I want to be. I don't really want to take a chance of going out in the first round. And if you're gonna have to play that best of three, I want it right here at Petco Park. I want the Mets to be the opponent. If it works out that way, doesn't mean I want to boo Juan Soto. I want to boo that. Well, me and a lot of other people apparently, because he gets booed really loud here. But yeah, the Mets could come in here and win two games. There's no argument. But any team could go anywhere and win two games. So I have to take my chances where I feel best.
What we do know is the numbers tell us in the wild card round there is no home field advantage.
It wasn't last year. You're right.
There hasn't in any year since we've changed it. It has been. The numbers tell you that it is less than 50% for home field to win. Yeah. And the rounds after, it becomes over 50, and it just increases.
Yeah, and to your point, last year there were the four wild card series, two in each league. The only team playing at home that advanced was the Padres.
Yeah.
Everybody else won on the road. So you're right. There's no guarantees anywhere. So let's win the division. I'm still keeping an eye on the Phillies, opening the door for us to get a bye. But you're right, Tony. Now, the way Nola pitched last night, that is a long way off. There are five games to make up there. Michael King tonight, I think what's going to happen, no matter what he does, Tony, we're going to overrate it. Not you and I, but just in general, right? If he goes out and gives up 3-4 runs and 2 1/3 innings and comes out, people are going to go, oh, God, that's it. Michael King's not going to help us.
Right.
Yeah, and if he goes 4 shutout and retires all 12 he faces, then, he's ready for Game 7 of the World Series. Right. So I don't think any of those are true. I think he's got to go out there tonight, just get comfortable, back on the mound again. And, the guy's pitched two innings since May 18th. It's almost 4 months. So just get comfortable. Throw your pitches. Hopefully have a little command. You're not going to have full command of it. Try to get ahead of the hitters a little bit. And, get out of the game with the Padres still having a chance to win. To me, that's a successful night for Michael King.
Yeah, I think it should be viewed the same way it was for when Darv came back and pitched. Right? I think it's been so long since he's pitched that you have to have some type of, I don't even know what the word is I'm looking for, but you have to kind of temper your
welcome to
your
my age, Tony. That happens all the time.
You have to temper
the senior
your
moments like that where you forget a word. It's right there on the tip of you can see it, but your mind just will not allow you to say it. So.
It was not forming at all right there.
It does happen.
But you should temper your expectations. I think if he can get four plus, I would consider that a good night, especially if he keeps the Padres in the ball game. But I think ultimately the thing I'm looking for most is that he walks off the mound and we wake up tomorrow and it's like he's good. There's right. no, he's not feeling anything. His yeah. knee didn't swell back up. Because listen, when you're dealing with knees, that is a possibility, right? Like he get out there, you land wrong, or the knee just doesn't respond well. That's what I'm looking forward to more than anything, is that he's healthy and that he will be able to make the next start. Because I think the four, we basically heard Michael say it. Like, it has been strategic to get him to this point where he had four starts to kind of map his way and get himself in the best possible rhythm and shape that he can have going into the playoff, ideally.
I think the best result, put another way, the best result for Michael King tonight will be for Michael King to be pitching Sunday against Colorado.
Correct.
That
Correct.
Means tonight was good.
Yep.
No matter what the result is. If he's out there starting Sunday against Colorado, then this was a good night for him. So we'll see. Littell, as I mentioned, with the Reds, does give up home runs, but he has beaten the Padres already this year. And he's with the Rays, very capable right-hander. Abbott goes tomorrow for the Reds. He has been another Lodolo, yeah. man, just really yeah. tough left-handed pitcher. So, you know, the next couple of games, you got to, you know, get your job done and stay in there and get, you know, handle it. And keep a little pressure on the Dodgers if you can. Real quick, Tony, the Monday night game. How about J.J. McCarthy?
Yeah, man.
That to me is a – you couldn't ask for a better start. Unless he just came out and threw six touchdowns in the first half. But
better you couldn't ask for a better finish.
Yeah. The start was brutal.
Right, to look at this guy for three quarters, I thought the Vikings may not score this season.
That's what I thought, too.
And listen. Yeah, three touchdown drives in a row to win the game. Man.
There were a ton of pundits that had been, you know, all over our guy Kevin, thinking that he had made a bad mistake, especially through those first three quarters. It was
Kevin
looking kind of dicey.
About. Yeah, he was taking a beating, yeah.
But you know what's funny? I don't know if I told you guys this. I ran into Kevin in Minnesota. He was at the game.
You didn't tell him.
On Sunday. And he happened to be talking to Shilty. And I can't remember who else was standing there, but he was talking about young quarterbacks and how you kind of have to – I kind of took it as you kind of have to, like, piecemeal it for them a little bit early. And you just hope that they can grasp it enough that you can start to expand it. And you could solidly see him trying to kind of guide him through early. And then when it gets down to that the crunch time there, you just need to let him kind of go out and make plays. And he made some good ones there. Three drives to get or three TDs at the end.
Yeah.
I think that's in two different storylines, right? I mean, Caleb Williams went out and everybody was anxious to see what he goes 10-for-10 to start the game. He looks like Ben Johnson has already made big strides with him, but he finished kind of flat. He went, I think, 4 of 14 or 15 down the stretch there, completions, something that, you know, didn't look great. And on the flip side, J.J. McCarthy, a lot of question marks there, didn't look good through three quarters, but when it mattered, winning time came, he was at his best. And, yeah, I think you're right, a great start for him in Chicago last night.
Tony, when you were speaking with my former best friend, did you ask him why his PR people don't get back to me anymore?
You know, I didn't ask him, but, you know, he's definitely an NFL head coach. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like
he's got that aura about him. Even as he stood there and was talking.
What does that have to do with him coming on the show?
It's not our guy. He's not the same guy. He's got the same name.
I think he's kind of busy, man. I just think he doesn't have time.
Well, he told us on the air 2 years ago that he would come on anytime. So
yeah, well.
A lot has happened in 2 years, brother.
He did become coach of the year.
And he might have been the coach of week one. This week.
He may have been.
Because that was, you know, you mentioned it, Tony, but he started, you know, as his first job was quarterback coach, I think, with the Patriots. And then, you know, offensive coach.
Then he went
coach
to the Jets.
He went a lot of places. But he's worked with quarterbacks, and he was a quarterback. But I think he really understands it.
He does.
I think for McCarthy, that was the perfect guy to help him, guide him through his first game.
100%.
I don't think any other coach, you know, it might have been a whole different outcome. But Kevin... You know, I was happy for him, and you know, the Vikings get that win last night. And, you know, Ben Johnson, he was a genius for three quarters. And he was a genius. Yeah, I told Scraby, I said, it's easy to be a genius when you're the offensive coordinator of the Lions. You got the best players. He doesn't have the best players anymore, so we'll see. It wasn't a terrible outing.
No,
it just wasn't. Didn't get the win. So good finish.
Get the win. I mean, this was a terrible outing for the Bears.
You think it was a bad loss?
The Vikings look like they couldn't do anything on offense, and the Bears should have won that game.
Okay. I will say, you know, your guy, you know, it might not have worked out as the head coach in Miami, but as a defensive coordinator, you hear it across the board.
Oh, like Brian Flores.
He confuses a lot of young quarterbacks. And that's what it looked like when it got time to the end. Like, Caleb was a little bit trigger shy. Now, I will say he missed quite a few throws in that last little bit there that he should have completed that would have completely, you know, turned the way that game ended. But there's that.
Yeah, well, not to rewrite history, Tony, but the day the Dolphins fired Brian Flores was not a happy day as far as I was concerned.
No, you're right.
I was
right,
a fan of that guy the entire time.
Yeah.
And, you know,
he got a raw deal there, it seemed like.
He did. They went from, you know, hardcore, work hard, to vacation time with Mike McDaniels, and that isn't going too well either.
He has, like, the zinc on his nose during practice.
Who was it that called Mike McDaniels out this year for having too soft of a team?
Oh,
it was an NFL player.
Yeah,
Was it Samuel? Was it Asante Samuel? Was it that him who's calling him out?
No, they were joint practicing, Chris. Who did they joint practice with
this
year?
Lions? It was a disaster with the Lions. Tony.
Yeah, that's Tony.
That's one of those moments you're talking about.
There's
right there.
One of those moments. Yeah.
Where
sure.
am I?
Yeah, you're Tony.
Oh, did Dan Marino play yet?
I don't know where that one was. Yeah.
You should have heard Chris and Adam arguing about whose team was worse before
the
show.
Yeah, he thinks the Falcons are worse than the Dolphins. I'm like, please.
No shot.
But
no shot.
He also said something I agree with. I would much rather get blown out than have a close game and lose at the end of the game.
That's a fanatic way of thinking.
It is.
For sure.
There is no way any fan worth their salt would want to sit through 16 more of the games I just sat through.
You're right about that.
That's ridiculous.
But talking about who was criticizing Mike McDaniel, I don't remember who that was, but just get in line. I mean, the line is around the block right now. Everybody's ripping on him and that team. All right, when we come back, Mark Ziegler will jump in. Why? Because the Aztecs basketball schedule is out. And that's always fun. We'll talk about the season and what's ahead for Brian Dutcher's team and the latest there as Gwen and Chris continues.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back at you again, 2:38 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matthew Scraby. Padres getting set for game two against the Redlegs. We will report to you a lineup when we get one. We haven't got one yet. Mark Ziegler will join us here shortly to talk a little bit about the Aztecs again. Looking to, I don't know, take whatever that next step is. I mean, this has been a perennial
best time of the year almost. I love Padre baseball and what they've done, but Aztec basketball, the gift that keeps giving, Tony, I say every winter, man. They've come through for us about what now 14 years in a row, and thereabouts, just at different levels of success. Yeah. Should be another.
Scraby, were you trying
year.
To tell me something? Because you like.
Yeah, the board is kind of tough to tell people things, but our guest is ready.
Mark Ziegler.
Okay. See,
bring
I would have on. Never heard that if I didn't ask that question.
Does it sound like this?
It didn't sound like anything. It sounded like you hit the button and let it go before you said what you needed to say.
Okay.
But anyway. Mark Ziegler joins us, Union Tribune. Mark, how are you, my friend? It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been good. I missed you last couple of times I was on.
Yeah, you have.
Questions weren't quite up to the usual standards.
All right. He got me.
This came out pretty, looked pretty tough. I mean, What's the expectation? I know it's early and we haven't even got on the court yet, but I mean, what is this Aztec, or what are the questions, I should say, that the staff have about this group of Aztecs?
I think if we ask Brian Dutcher, I have a pretty good idea of what he'd say. He'd say, can they rebound? Because there was not a very good rebounding team last year. And, you know, this is a program that hangs its hat on defense and rebounding. We forget the rebounding part sometimes. And that's part of defense. You gotta end the possession with a rebound. You can make the other team take a terrible shot, you know, late in the shot clock. But if you don't rebound it, it doesn't do you any good. And usually when teams get offensive rebounds, it leads to a really good shot. If you look at the analytics on that, I mean, the 3-point shots after an offensive rebound percentage of those being made are way, way up over in a half-court set. So I think that's the biggest concern. It's been a huge emphasis. I've been to some practices. They do it every day. But I think just with experience, they have a little bit more size. I think they really emphasize with Magoon, turning him into a better rebounder. He obviously can block shots. Same with Farrell Compton, making him a better rebounder. Miles Heidi is a good rebounder. But I think that's the biggest question. I mean, I think they're going to be able to score. I think with their length and athleticism, they'll be able to defend. It's just that aspect of the game that gets overlooked a lot, but I think it's going to be important to their success.
Why are they getting no love around the country, Mark? I mean, I know that we should expect a certain amount of that because it's the Mountain West Conference. But you would almost think the Aztecs have transcended that a little bit, considering, you know, they went to back-to-back Sweet 16s and a final, and they're in the tournament every year. And it seems by all accounts from people who do follow college basketball, not just reading your stuff, but that they really have added some potential impact players this year to have another really good, you know, Brian Dutcher-type squad, yet they have to kind of start from scratch when it comes to rankings and things like that.
Yeah, it's a really good question because I it's something I've noticed over the years. I mean, it wasn't too long ago. I mean, the 1920 team went 30-2. They weren't ranked in the preseason, and they were 30-2. I mean, how do you miss on that? But I think one of the issues this year is that so much of the rankings used to be on who do you have coming back. Now it's who do you have coming in.
Yeah.
And if you look at their transfer class, it's very, very strategic. Maybe not real sexy players, but they're meeting a very specific need. You know, Jeremiah Oden, the four-man who can back up Magoon and play some three and maybe come off the bench. And, you know, Sean Newman, not a great scorer-shooter, but he's a really good passer. Latrell Davis, you know, he's more of a guy for the future, although I think he's really, really good and could impact the team now. But that's kind of... You know, and then you look at these other teams that brought in, you know, four projected starters, and people just get, you know, big eyes over that.
Right.
And
yeah,
it's also the power conference thing too. They're paying so much attention to power conferences, and I think they're being overlooked. I mean, I expect them to be ranked in the top 25, but I wouldn't be shocked if they're not, just because I've seen really good teams not get ranked before at San Diego State. It's kind of a tradition, but I think they should be in that. You know, I'm going to rank them probably around 17. I think they'll probably end up in the mid 20s, right? You know, 22 to 28, somewhere in there.
Mm. Mark Ziegler joins us, Union Tribune. He covers our Aztecs. And Mark, you know, you mentioned strategy as it pertains to the roster. Reading your article, there's clearly some strategy in how they put together this schedule. It seems like a very difficult schedule. Some of the powerhouses, or you may say former powerhouses, UCLA on there, look like Arizona. What do you think about, what is Dutch's idea behind this strategy in scheduling these tough teams?
So they approach it as looking at getting, you know, the goal of this program is to get to the NCAA tournament. It's the expectation of this program. It's not a hope anymore, and so they schedule that way. So there's three ways to get there. One is to schedule really hard in the non-conference, and most Mountain West schools or mid-majors don't do that because you've got coaches who are younger. They're worried about their salaries, keeping their jobs, and they want to have a nice, sexy, pretty record. Dutch is old enough and secure enough that he's going to go out, and he also understands the numbers. And when you say Dutch in the schedule, it's really Matt Soria. He's a scheduling guru. He's one of the best in the country. He should get he should get the flowers for putting these things together more than anybody else on the staff. Yeah, and really good at what he does. And it's very, very meticulous the way he puts the games together. But anyway, they want to have three or four big-time, top 25-type games in November and December that allow them a chance to, if they just win one of those, they're probably in the NCAA tournament. Because the problem with mid-majors is you don't have the strength of schedule in your conference. You don't have that much comparison. Whereas a school like a UCLA, you know, they don't have to play a great non-conference schedule because they're going to play so many good teams, the Big Ten, so many tournament-bound teams that all you got to do is beat three or four of them, and they're going to have enough opportunities to do that. San Diego State looks upon it as our opportunities come in November and December. So that's the first way to get in the tournament. And if you look at last year, they're not getting in if they don't beat Houston.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, you know, they got into the players' era, and they played a real hard schedule. They played Houston, and they beat them. And that was the major reason they got in. Second way is to win your conference, which they really haven't had a great success over the course of the conference schedule of actually winning the regular season title in the last few years. And that's probably because they're at a disadvantage not being an altitude team and the travel and all that. And there's some other things with injuries last year. And then the third way is to win your conference tournament. So it gives them three shots, but they want to take that first shot. They're not going to be like other programs that wait for the second and third shot. They want to take their swing early. And with this team, he knows they're going to be good, and they have guys coming back. So I think he feels like they're going to be good early. And that's why you see, you know, obviously players at Arrow Festival, but some tough games in there pretty early.
Mark Ziegler's with us. Aztec basketball still a little bit away, but never too early to talk some hoops. I think the opener's November 4th, the actual season opener. But people are excited about that scrimmage, which is now open to the public on October 17th with UCLA coming here. So make sure you check that out. I know they're selling tickets for that as well. And that'll be a lot of fun. The one thing I saw Dutcher say in your article today is something that we should remind everybody of, Mark. For all of us, our last trip to Laramie, our last trip to Albuquerque, our last trip to Reno. Aztecs are switching conferences. I don't think anybody's going to have a tear about missing Albuquerque and Colorado Springs and all the altitude that has gone with this conference. But one more time through the old Mountain West, huh?
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking about this. How many of these programs, because in football, some of these teams will play each other. And, you know, when BYU left the conference, they still played. And, you know, every now and then you see a Utah game against a Mountain West team. But I don't think San Diego State will be playing these teams.
No.
Particularly in the home and home, and particularly on the road.
Right.
Even New Mexico, which is a good team, I just don't think, you know, you're going to go fly to Albuquerque and play in the pit. I just don't think you'll see it. So, you know, enjoy it this year because the chances of them playing any of these teams is going to be pretty remote, particularly Laramie. And it's nothing against the people Laramie. Every time I say it, I get a ton of emails and tweets, you know, saying, you know, just was filled with hate. And I love the people Laramie. I actually like the town of Laramie. But I think from a basketball standpoint, when you're in San Diego State's shoes and you only get four charter legs a year and you got to burn two of them going to Laramie and playing 7,000 feet, it's just not a good deal for you. And that's all it is. But yeah, they're not going to miss it. And, you know, obviously still Utah State in elevation and Colorado State. So there'll still be two elevation games in the new conference, but that's better than six.
You mentioned Compton earlier. I was so impressed with his freshman year. I mean, he seems like one of these guys that you're talking about rebounding. He already is a big guy. I mean, I imagine the summer was good to him in terms of putting on some more weight. I mean, what type of year are we expecting in year two from him?
I really think he's going to have a breakout year just from what I've seen in practices. And the big thing for him was his body. I wrote about it earlier in the summer. As soon as the season ended, he and Taj DeGourville both kind of came to the realization after going through a freshman year that, you know, you've got to change your body if you're going to take a professional attitude towards this. And he did. And the thing about him is he has a high work rate, but his body wasn't allowing him to keep working hard. It would keep fatiguing. And when he fatigued, he had the longest arms I've ever seen. He starts reaching because he can, and that's what he did in high school. That was sort of the default.
getting in better shape has allowed him to do is A, be more active, but also he's staying in the stance longer. He can chase rebounds out of his area more, and he can just go harder longer. And I think that with his body type and his skill set, that's really going to help him. I mean, I think he may start. I think he's got a good chance of starting as a five man who's really only like 6'6", 6'7", but with those arms, plays like he's 7 feet, which is a classic San Diego State big. Running the floor, you know, blocking shots. He's improved his outside jumper. I saw him make some threes in the Swish League. You know, he's working really hard in his free throw so he can be in there at the end of the game. But, yeah, I expect he's going to be a guy that takes a big – you know, guys take the biggest step freshman to sophomore year, but I really think you're going to see it in him.
Got a couple minutes left, Mark. This is a Scraby question, so don't expect it to be the level of the others.
Why are you blaming this on me?
Because it's less.
Scraby's got good questions.
Thank you.
Oh, so the problems with my questions.
Oh, my process of elimination.
Yeah, it must have been me.
Yeah,
then.
There you go. Sorry, Chris.
Must have been me. Now, Scraby wants to know whether you've gotten a loan from Kawhi Leonard lately with all the money he was getting from the Clippers. I'm just curious if you had a laugh reading all of that stuff, or I know that they're after Ballmer and all that stuff. I don't believe any of it, honestly, but we'll see where it goes. But they kind of dragged Kawhi's name through the mud with that whole story, really. You know, I mean, made him look like he's, you know.
It's unfortunate, Kawhi, and on a certain level, you can't blame Kawhi, because if someone wants to give you $28 million job for planting trees that you don't have to plant, I mean, I take it. I wouldn't have any qualms with it. But, you know, to me, my perspective is probably a little bit different than other people is. So his original agent when he came out of college was a guy named Brian Elfis, who is from Carlsbad, and as agents go, he is the most genuine, bona fide, real human being. And I don't mean to degrade agents, but he's really a good guy. And he got kind of pushed out of the way by Uncle Dennis. I get it. It's family. You want your family to run it. Fine. But Uncle Dennis didn't get a law degree. Doesn't have a business background, and isn't an agent by trade. And I think that's part of the reason you end up in this situation. I just can't imagine my guy, Brian, doing this if he's still Kawhi's agent and approving it and feeling good about it and understanding the risk and the downside of it if it ever got exposed, which these things always end up getting exposed.
Yeah, right.
So I think a lot of it is you know, you see these guys get in trouble sometimes when you have family, and of course you're loyal to your family and you trust your family, but you know, uncle is not an MBA, is not a law degree, and so I just think I think that's probably where he got in a little bit of trouble, and now he's going to pay the price a little bit in terms of his image and maybe some, you know, financial blowback.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Mark, as always, man, we appreciate you spending some time with us, educating us on the Aztecs before the season gets started.
Thanks, Marky.
Catch up again later.
Hey, real quick, last time I asked you guys what your prediction on San Diego State football wins was after this last week. Do you want to revise that, Chris?
What did I say? I want to have hope. I just do. I do.
It doesn't sound like you have much hope, though.
Sean Lewis said they played a bad game. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Still give him six wins. I don't know.
I'm glad you didn't ask me, because I was going to say 9, because I was really bullish, because I thought their schedule was really weak and I thought they could really take advantage of it.
Yeah.
But now, but one of the 9 was beating Washington State, who I didn't think was very good. So.
Well, at least staying within 26
maybe
points.
Maybe I'm down to 8.
Yeah. I don't know.
Mark, we'll catch up with you, man.
Thanks so much,
okay.
Mark. See you.
Yep, see you guys. Bye.
Man. Mark Ziegler, always fun to have on, always better educated about our Aztecs after having a conversation with him.
Yeah, and if you're looking for the big ones this year, I mentioned the UCLA thing. That's a scrimmage, but it's still, you know, going to be fun to have that game. Michigan and Oregon are the two that are on the schedule in Las Vegas tournament, and then they'll have a third opponent based on the results of the first two rounds.
Tournament's loaded, too.
Loaded again, yeah. And then the other big one they have is against Arizona in Phoenix. It's at a neutral court. It's not because Arizona's in Tucson,
but it's
still going to be in Arizona. But those are the ones that, you know, they get one of those and then take care of the rest of their business. They'll probably be playing in March again. So that's kind of what it's about.
Let's get to break. More Gwynn and Chris on the other side. A little Daily Gambit.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.